Welcome to the Crossroads Sports Radio Show, presented by Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Crossroads Sports Radio. It is Wednesday, January 23rd. We are simulcast tonight. We have the Blog Talk Radio Show online for you to listen to. And then we also have Facebook Live tonight. So everybody will be listening to Facebook Live and how the show is going to go. Be interactive on here with your comments. If we get to some of those, we'll talk. Also, if you want to call into the show later on, you can. The number for that is 929-477-3331. 929-477-3331. Big show tonight. I'm, of course, joined by Jonathan Birdsong, as always. JB, how are we?
Good evening, Brandon Reef and Crossroads fans everywhere. Hopefully worldwide, right? But good evening. Yes, you're right. And I'm glad to hear that we got everything technology-wise going in the right direction. Love the world. The connected world. You got to love it.
Absolutely. We've got a big show tonight. We've got the talk of the AFC and NFC playoffs. We have a little bit of Super Bowl talk. And then we're actually going to be – probably the majority of the show is going to be joined by Nick Peterson, who's our Crossroads Sports college basketball bracketology guru. He's going to join us. He's got several things to talk about in the world of college basketball and what to look forward to coming up. So he will be joining us at the top of the hour, about 7:05 or so he'll be calling in. We'll have him join us, and then we've got some NBA talk to in the nightcap this evening. So a lot to get to. So, John, let's get right into it. The NFC Championship game, a little bit amidst controversy.
Rams-Saints.
What'd you think of it?
Well, you know, I've been going with the hashtag ever since the start of the season, Team of Destiny. That was the LA Rams, and that's kind of like, you know, this kind of harkened back to the Rams from the early 2000s, how fun they were to watch. And this team is obviously, you know, years apart from that particular regime of Rams. But, you know, so you had me my reaction. Of course, I wanted the Rams to go to the Super Bowl. So this is, of course, my pick, for at least from that side of the Super Bowl. It's a horrible call. We all know it. You know what I'm saying? I don't know what kind of – of course, you can't replay the game over. They're not going to do that ever. And, of course, the NFL came out and said that they made a mistake and they, you know, passed their apologies off of that. I don't know. What do you give them, a game check? You give them the same game check that they would get? I'm being so honestly, because, I mean, that's honest. It's not going to ever sue the fact that you didn't play the Super Bowl, but the game check, I don't know. Game check plus, you know, whatever else, if he was going to a Pro Bowl, would seemingly be, I don't know, seemingly fair. Because, again, there's no what's the resolve. There's fans and whatnot and people thinking about suing the NFL, which I guess, I mean, it's America. You can sue whatever. But, again, it's a game that we're talking about and it's made upon human error. When I look at it, and I don't want to dominate the conversation, Brandon, but when I look at it, it seemingly, just to give the guys an excuse, but then again, even when I make this excuse, it still doesn't give them leverage enough not to throw a flag. In real time, real fast, it really looked like it was just a bang-bang play and that the defensive back tripped into the receiver. Well, even with that, even if you give him that excuse, Brandon, right, that's still pass interference.
Absolutely.
So part of the majesty, right? I can't think of a better word. Part of the, you know, why we watch professional sports, whether it be basketball, football, in this case, is that there's also the human error fact, is that how can that referee blow that call or whatnot? And, you know, the NFL and subsequently all the other leagues, too, have put in cameras where everything is kind of caught. I don't want to go to where we have to challenge. You know, I don't want to go to that. I know there's been some talk about, like, do you want to the rules change so you can challenge, you know what I'm saying, calls
right
on the field and whatnot to that point. I don't want to, I really don't want to go to that point. But I say this. You're going to have to put more pressure on the guys on the field to get to call the right call.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
That would be my answer to the issue. Like, dude, you can't blow a call like that. I don't care if you were looking away or you blinked. you have to make the right call. Call another guy over to say, hey, man, you know, they take up so much time anyway, right?
Right. Well, here was the problem. The problem was there was two referees in that end zone, both of them, because there was a fan that actually recorded it in one of the first rows. But you see both referees, one at the goal line and then one, obviously, that's coming up the field. And the fact that neither one of them saw it, that's the concern that I have. If they're missing that, what else are they missing? Obviously, yeah, you can't go and you can't sit there and put a game check and say, or say, you know what, we're going to redo the game or we're going to redo the last play. You can't do that. Theoretically, you can't. Maybe the game check. But also, you got to think, John, there's people's employment that matter on these games, you know?
All right.
Not making it, getting fired or whatnot. And right. Or it might be the only time you get this far. So a lot of different things. I don't know what the right thing is. Like you said, it takes so long. Why can't we review a simple thing like this? I think before long, everything's just going to be reviewable.
Well, I hope it doesn't get to that point, but yeah, I agree. I don't think that there's something that the officials on the field, all of them, not just the ones who are technically in position, all of them mm-hmm. are responsible for those calls. They work as a unit, they're a team, just like the teams that are playing on the field. So that would be the pressure going into the next season, or actually not even going to the next season, going to the next game, going to the Super Bowl. You know, we don't want a bad call, Super Bowl, not do we, right? So
right.
Going to the next game. I wouldn't assume that any of those officials that worked that last game would work at the Super Bowl. I really wouldn't assume they would work. You know what I'm saying?
No.
For the questions and like whatnot, what would be coming down the pipeline to them. Like, how did you not see it? You know what I mean? But like I said, going into the off season where I know there'd be a lot of drama, talk about when it comes to rules and whatnot changing up, or and then with other NFL drama, player moving whatnot, they really need to have a meeting with the officials saying how they should get it right on the field the first time.
Right. And that play was towards the end of the game. Yeah, absolutely. But before that, even, I mean, does anybody want to talk about the Saints' poor play calling, clock management?
Well,
you throw in three pass
plays? Yeah, I do appreciate some people are a little bit more enlightened to the game because they play. You know, and Shannon Sharp said something that I kind of pulled into my vernacular and I thought about it. He said, like, that's not the same team that blew out the Cowboys, you know, 3 or 4 weeks ago offensively. It wasn't. And I don't know if it was because, Drew Brees, he did celebrate a party, and I don't know. Yeah, I had a big party when I turned 40, so I don't know if he, you know, I'm assuming he probably had a big party, big bash when he turned 42. But, you know, they just wasn't on. And we can say they wasn't the same team, but again, playoffs, they have a different intensity than the regular season. And obviously, Dallas Cowboys aren't the Los Angeles Rams. But if we have to point and make it, you know what I'm saying, besides the bad call, we have to also say that the offense, like, hey, you spotted 13 points on the Rams. You got to finish the deal. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they had a big lead.
Yeah, you got to finish the deal. You scored 10 points. You know, this team's capable of scoring, you know, 14 in 6 minutes. I think they're the second or third most offensive team in the league. So
correct.
If you spot them 13 and think that's going to get it done, you're sadly mistaken.
Yeah, Alvin Kamara, he got bottled up throughout the game. Mark Ingram, the rushing game was never there. And I understand Peyton in his post game saying, well, on the play calling at the end of the game, rushing game wasn't there. But you still got to do it. I mean, you got to have the Rams burn those timeouts. They would have got the ball back with roughly, you know, less than 50 seconds to go. Now, granted, for these two teams, 50 seconds is an eternity. That's one thing. But the fact that you pass the ball three times when really all you had to do, and you have one of the best running backs in the game besides Todd Gurley, and you don't run it, you only got the fault yourselves. And let's not even get the fact that they had the ball in overtime too. And that wounded duck that breezed through, that cost them.
Yeah, wasn't Drew Brees' finest game or finest hour. I don't foresee him walking off into the sunset next year. Another somewhat season heartbreaker for the Saints. thinking if you think about what happened with them last year against Minnesota. But, you know, again, just small little things kind of hurt you in games, it's, you know what I mean, with football. Small little things,
right.
they add up, and there you are. You lose a game. I think the better team won. So,
And you were right. I had the Saints. Before the season started on our radio show, I predicted the Saints in the Super Bowl, and we came damn near close. So, all right, moving over to the AFC side. Patriots, Chiefs in overtime, another overtime game. First time that both conference championship games went to overtime. So that was pretty cool to see. I think the best phrase for that game, too much time for Brady. And as much as you hate me to say it all the time, he's the GOAT for a reason. And that's Tom Brady.
A lot of high-stakes drama. Come on. You know, I'm going to be argumentative about this. I thought about this. I've been hearing nothing but ghost comments from friend info alike. You know what I'm saying? It's hard. We're not necessarily super Colts fan. No Colts fan I know will call Tom Brady. We'll say Tom Brady and GOAT in the same breath. They won't. You know what I mean? Call him a great winner and whatnot. But come on, so I had to find something wrong. So this, you mean to tell me this dude threw, let's say, three picks, but he threw two picks, and he played a horrible game. So, Brent, how I look at it, like, Andy Reid lost a game for by news. So who's the number one rated offense in the league? Kansas City. Is it not?
Right.
It is. Kansas City's the number one rated offense in the league. So when you get the coin toss, you elect to go on defense? Now, here, Kansas City's team defense at home, they play out of their mind. It ain't Steel Curtain out of your mind. It ain't even Chicago Bears 2018 out of your mind. So why would I put my defense out there to give them to make them feel good? No, you play to your strength. Bill Belichick plays to his strengths always.
Right.
Always catch the ball. So he managed the game, coached the game, and then when Tom Brady had the opportunity to basically pass the test, that he's already passed a 2-minute warning where I got 2 minutes before a touchdown. You know what I mean? There's a test they've already passed before. It's a test there. So sign still delivered Andy Reid. I mean, no, he didn't. Patrick Mahomes played out his mind. Patrick Mahomes, did he not? He did everything. Not saying I'm the coach, right, or the general manager, but he did everything necessary that I said they had to do. Don't turn
Correct.
Over the ball. He didn't turn over. He didn't turn over the ball. Andy Reid and everybody else made boneheaded play after boneheaded play. Lining up,
yeah.
Come on, man. Lining up in the, lining up in the, like, dude, not in maybe week two, maybe in the preseason you do something boneheaded like that, maybe week three, but not in the AFC championship game. Somebody in my water cooler said, man, Bill Belichick would cut a dude week four, week five if he did that. I know it's harsh, but, man, yeah, he should. Plus, but you know what, Brandon? And I'm not to go on a tangent because we're just going five different directions. They will,
right.
Bill Belichick scouts these teams better than anybody else, better than anybody else. Kelce, the tight end, he's known to choke big games. Go back to last year's game. He's known to choke big games. I mean, choke from his standpoint. He ain't a quarterback, so he's known to drop balls in critical times. He's known to come up
short. I'm not a fan of Kelce at all. Never liked him. I thought he was overrated.
Like, he has great stats because he'll go on a 6-week tear between week four and week nine where it's nothing but him catching touchdowns and him catching nothing but 16 yards out, 18 yards out. But when it comes
right.
to, you know.
He was also the only receiver for Kansas City for how many years when Alex Smith was there? So,
right. So at this point now, like, everybody knows his habits, including Bill Belichick. So, you know, it was just, of course, not that the Colts were playing, but from like a competitive standpoint to see it sucks to see the Patriots go to the Super Bowl again and potentially probably got to be favored. I don't care how good, I can call the Rams Tim Desi all they want, but they have to be favored. I haven't seen the odds yet, but the Patriots have to be, even though they lost Super Bowl last year, they have to be favored to win.
Well, that's what we call a great segue in the entertainment business. And so looking ahead at the Super Bowl 53, Patriots-Rams, The current line right now is Patriots -2.5.
Wow.
That opened up. It opened up 10 minutes after the game at the Rams -2.5. And then everybody threw money on the Patriots immediately as underdogs,
look,
including myself.
Look,
so
I
got
like,
Patriots +2.5.
I guess so. I really like the, you know, the pass rush that, or the, not pass rush, but like how they can stop the running back, because the running backs ate up Kansas City. And I was running back to Sarkowski. I don't know how Andy Reid didn't see it. I'm like, Tony Romo was calling the game for everybody in America.
He did a great job. I loved it. I love Tony Romo calling.
He asked, you know what, I shade Tony Romo on certain things, you know, as a player, but because color commentary has said it. He said it, and then 2 minutes later, not even 2 minutes, it happened. And I'm like, dude, how the heck can Andy Reid, like, maybe Tony Romo needs to be the daggone coach of the Kansas City Chiefs. You know what I mean? Because they can't, the Kansas City Chiefs, they, of course, found a scapegoat. They fired a defensive coordinator. You know what I mean? Like, it was his fault. But who built the team? Of course, the general manager ain't going to fire himself. And Andy Reid is on the pass because guess what? He got it this far. Everybody thought that them trading Alex Smith was the worst decision ever. Everybody on ESPN, every writer, everybody thought Patrick Mahomes, this dude didn't win a game at Texas. I'm sorry, he went to Texas Tech, I do believe.
Yes, Texas.
He didn't. I mean, he wasn't a big winner. Shit, it's hard to win in the daggone Big 12 sometimes. You know, I think that's a big deal. It's hard to win there. But, you know what, bro? Like I said, you know, the Patriots have to be favored because Jared Goff ain't Patrick Mahomes. they have to be favored. I like Jared Goff. I like what he brings to the table. And like I said, I like what that defense with Sue. Hell, a lot of people forget Sue even plays for the Rams. You know what I'm saying? And Glover. But they have to play an error-free game in order to beat the Patriots. And I don't think the Rams is – Team of Destiny or no, and I love them. I like them, right? But Team of Destiny or no, I don't think they can play an error-free game. I don't.
Absolutely. Like I said, it's – you have to execute on the chances you have against Brady and the Patriots. If you don't, Belichick, they'll rip you apart. And in my opinion, two things. One, Bill Belichick's the best coach in football history. So, sorry, that's going to piss off some people here in Indianapolis. Secondly, nobody makes second half adjustments like Bill Belichick does. So, you better have gotten it figured out and then figure out at halftime what adjustments he's going to make and then adjust on those. And maybe Sean McVay can. They keep calling him the guru, the genius. Maybe he can do it. I mean, I think it's great. We've got two old guys with Brady and Belichick against two young guys, McVay and Goff. I think it sets up an interesting matchup. It's going to be intriguing. It's going to be fun. I told you back on last week's show that this is going to be a great game to watch these two teams.
You know, I just, you know, still, like, again, play, like I said, in order to beat the Patriots, you have to play to your strengths, whatever your team chemistry might be, or team strengths might be. The Rams team chemistry is running the ball and, you know, having Jared Goff make a play here and there, with play, you know what I mean, down the field. I just don't know if I'm leery of him against him, his mind, and his playmaking ability against Bill Belichick's mind and what he can scheme up. But I do like the defense. I like the defensive chance better. I don't think the defense – I know they won't. The defense of the Rams will not make the same – you know what I'm saying – the same mistakes as the Kansas City Chiefs' defense is making.
Right.
They won't.
Now, I think everybody knows how big of a Colts fan you are and all that, and you hate the Patriots, obviously, and well said. But – you know, the same argument we keep having is I think by the end of this football season, I'm going to have to – I think I can convert you to admitting and saying that Tom Brady is the GOAT. And I'm going to give you a couple stats here, okay? John, this is his ninth Super Bowl, okay, appearance. How many have we had? We're about to have 53, right? That's over 17% of the all-time Super Bowls that this dude has played in, okay? He has a chance himself to match the Pittsburgh Steelers, a la Steeler Nation, for most Super Bowls in history. Now, the good news for Colts fans, listen in, Colts fans, because you're going to love this. Yes, you may have to suffer. It's always the darkest night before the dawn or something like that. There's some kind of phrase like that. So, Colts fans,
that's right.
If Brady wins this Super Bowl, there's a good chance he could retire. He'd go out, and then you won't have to worry about the Patriots anymore. There's that chance. We could all be happy with that. But let me tell you this. I talked about it last week on our show. Tom Brady won his first Super Bowl Sunday, February 3rd, against who? The Rams. St. Louis, right? On my birthday, won it. This Super Bowl in 2 weeks, it's going to be played on Sunday, February 3rd. My birthday. Who are they playing again? The Saints or the Rams?
The Rams.
So,
Los Angeles Rams.
Yeah, the Los Angeles Rams this time. So he goes. He started beating the Rams. He's going to end beating the Rams. He'll retire. Colts fans can rejoice because they don't have to worry about the Patriots. I mean, you don't have to worry about the Patriots because Bill Belichick will find somebody to come in there. But the Brady era will be done. But there's hope. There's a light at the end of the tunnel. Just get there. You just got to get there, and it's.
I think Belichick's got a plan for like after Tom Brady. He ain't retiring no time soon, I don't believe. I think the Patriots will win. I just hope they don't.
You did what? Say that again? You took the Patriots to win?
I think the Patriots will win. I just hope they don't.
Okay. Interesting. I've got the Patriots winning as well. Final score, let's see, over-under is 58 right now, so 35-31 Patriots, Brady MVP once again, unfortunately, and hopefully this is the end of the New England era, but I don't think it is. But tell me this, John, because you've seen a lot with Tom Brady over all the years, doesn't it look like this year means more to him, that he's more animated, he's more kind of celebratory, he's more
I think that's because of the report that that came out earlier in the season that him and Belichick and Kraft, everybody was at odds at some point, and actually he was worried about whether it was Jacoby Brissett or the other guy they traded to San Francisco. I don't necessarily, he handled it differently than Brett Favre. Everybody assumed, Brett Favre actually had a war within the media between him and Green Bay when the transition time came to started happening, right? Tom Brady was a little bit different. Tom Brady played because we're more media savvy now, right? So Tom Brady played it like, why would they trade me? Hell, all I do is take the Super Bowl. So he didn't really come out and say, because that would be unfootball-like to go against a team, right? And then what do? You just go out there and win games and get to the Super Bowl or get to the, AFC Championship game, wherever it takes to get to, did they come up short sometimes? Yeah, but so long as you win, it doesn't matter who's behind me. They're unimportant. I'm continuing to produce or whatever. So, but I think that exuberance, that's what that comes from. Plus with the fact that I think they kind of know that Gronkowski is on borrowed time. Football, when he talks, football doesn't seem as important. Like, he's not, he's crazy about it, but he ain't insane about it. And there's a difference. So,
yeah. I think he's almost done.
Yeah. Because, I don't have to go through, two a days or, pads and training and having to watch what I eat. He does. And that, that's what comes with, and then injuries and, this is broken, this is dislocated, this needs to be shot up or whatever. Like, that's reality to them. Yeah, I got a $1 million, $4 million check, but that's reality to them. Sometimes they have to take those extreme measures to get on the field, right? But, I think they win, but I hope they don't. But,
yeah, I agree. On TV right now, SportsCenter, they're comparing Sean McVay to the young John Gruden when he won his Super Bowl.
Sean McVay's from Two Family Trees. He studied under. He's right. He's like the Wu-Tang Clan version of family of football. He studied. He's from the family tree of Mike Shanahan and John Gruden. I think they go and Jay Gruden as well. I think they go all the way back, always almost all to like a arena league. He's up. He's definitely going to be. Even if they lose, he's definitely. Hell, a dude got hired who was underneath him to be the head coach.
Yeah, yeah, for the Bengals. Shout out Cincinnati Bengals, Andrew Ritz, who is a big Bengals fan. You got your new coach, no Marvin Lewis. Hopefully, that brings good things to you guys.
Yeah, all those guys from the used to be underneath who's the head coach of came up with the West Coast offense, man. I know I'm terrible. I can't remember.
Walsh?
Used to be part of
Walsh.
All those Walsh, Walsh. Yeah, all those Walsh guys are gone. Like all those Walsh guys are kind of like been run their course or whatever. And like now this is what we're left. And this is what the new family tree is, McVay's family tree.
Absolutely, and hopefully he doesn't fizzle out kind of like Gruden did. And then try to make a comeback. I think with McVay, I think, can he draw up some things to go against the Patriots? Absolutely. You got 2 weeks to draw it up, but you look on the other hand, the Belichick, he's got 2 weeks to draw it up as well. So how to stop that offense, which honestly, I think it's easier to stop the Rams offense than it is to stop the Patriots offense, if that makes sense.
That makes total sense. I don't like necessarily comparing regular season to playoffs, but this particular regular season game had a playoff like atmosphere. When the Rams played Chicago in Chicago, it looked like McVay was ready to coach. It didn't look like the team was ready to play. So that kind of gave me pause. The team hasn't had a slump since. But defensively, we know that the Rams can be shut down. But you gotta bring a lot, of course, a lot of pressure and whatnot and confuse golf. And what the Patriots lack in staff. Like I mean, it's to be honest, Chicago got elite staff. The Patriots got okay staff, but they got the greatest, coach of all time. So again, Todd Gurley's going to play out his mind to make it interesting, I think.
Yeah,
absolutely. Make it interesting. Yeah,
absolutely. We've got a few minutes before Nick joins us, our college basketball guru. So I'm going to hit one quick hitter just because it was an interesting topic I saw this week. Amidst all the trade rumors with Antonio Brown, he did send out a cryptic tweet amidst the trade rumors, said, "One thing I understand about this fan base and I'll never forget and always appreciate is your passion. No, it's all love this way, and I'm forever thankful to Steeler Nation. This is not goodbye, but just a thank you." Take it as you wish, if that means he's out or if he's there. The BS continues. The circus continues.
It does,
and
man.
A lot of people have talked about letting them just – it's like two brothers. Ben and Brown are like two brothers. They'll talk. They'll get it straightened out, whatnot. But –
I hope they kumbaya this out. I really do. But the more and more he keeps on talking about it, I feel like he's going to be playing with the Bills or some other lesser team where we forget about him.
Colts are in Vegas odds have the Colts at +300, the third best odds
Ballard's not trading for that. Ballard's not bringing him in.
I would hope not.
This city's kind of, I think the city's embezzling. They don't want anybody trying to. He's not cashed out, but he's on the wrong side of 30. I'm sorry, you know what I'm saying.
Well,
he's still gonna be a productive back. He needs to figure out if he can figure out a way to get to Green Bay, another class. He would want to be in a class organization. You know what I'm saying? You said Dallas Cowboys. I agree with that. It's another class organization as much as I am critical of Jerry Jones and how he runs things down there in Big D. But the class
the 49ers?
He could go to the 49ers, yeah, but, is Garoppolo – is he going – I mean, that's still a lot of questions there at quarterback. It's still – I mean, yeah, he's a Belichick, but you didn't bring Belichick with you. Right. He's a Belichick quarterback, but you didn't bring Belichick with you, so.
Well, he's been working out with Kyler Murray too, and Kyler Murray could go number one overall. We've got several radio shows to talk about this, but he could go number one to the Cardinals, and which you just paid Rosen. So that's the crazy thing to me. You just got Rosen.
Yeah, I don't know. I've seen a couple of draft boards. Kyler Murray kind of high. I don't know. I really think
12, I think I saw.
Yeah, he's bad. I don't know. Play baseball, young man.
He wants that guaranteed money.
Baseball got guaranteed money?
Yeah. Probably a longer, yeah, longer career there, too.
And a long, right. And a long career, man. Yeah. So, and I heard some announcers comparing to Ricky Williams, said he had that kind of speed around him. I don't know, dude. I'm so out of touch with baseball sometimes. I can't keep up. Hell, somebody got traded from the – didn't the Reds just pick up somebody else from the Yankees?
Yes, Sonny Gray, pitcher from the Yankees, just went to the Reds. So the Reds are loading up.
Yeah, the Reds are loading up for another run this year. We'll see.
Right. Okay, well, we're going to subside our football talk for the moment, and we got to play the intro, his intro.
Our college basketball studio.
We are now joined by our college basketball guru, Crossroads Sports guru, bracketologist, Nick Petey. Nick Peterson, how are we, my friend?
Hey, doing great. How you guys doing?
We are good. We are good. My oh my, college basketball season's heating up now. We've got about 2 months until the tournament, conference tournaments here at the end of February, movers and shakers in every conference. Nick is going to join us, Jonathan, every so often here, kind of talk about college basketball. This guy knows his stuff. I'll kind of have him introduce himself. And then Nick, we're kind of going to let you kind of lead this way with college basketball. And then we'll chime in occasionally here and there on some things, my guy.
Great. Sounds good. Well, first and foremost, just happy to be here. Happy to be talking college basketball, the sport near and dearest to my heart. Growing up here in Indiana, basketball's king, and I grew up in the 90s, so the Hoosiers were my team. Those Calvert Chaney and Allen Henderson teams really made me fall in love with the sport. So that's kind of why I love college basketball, and I always will. So to kind of get started, just wanted to talk about a few of the games that we've seen over the last week or so that have really shaped some of what we've seen in college basketball. The first one being, that huge game, Duke versus Virginia. I really loved watching this one. It's really kind of two different contrasting styles. You've got obviously Duke that everybody knows. You got 3, 4, maybe 5 lottery picks, whatever they've got. Just a breadth of talent there. Versus Virginia, the ultimate system program. Play solid defense, control the clock, control the style and tempo of the game. Just really enjoyed it. It was such a back-and-forth game. Two very elite teams. You got to give Virginia a ton of credit for the success that they've seen in the ACC, really since Bennett's been there. So,
absolutely. It was a good game to watch.
Yep. Another one that was awesome over the weekend was that Michigan-Wisconsin game. I don't think anybody really saw that coming, but, I think nationally everybody thinks, what the heck's Michigan doing losing to a 6 or 7 loss team? Well, I mean, the Big Ten is tough, particularly this year. They got, basically 11 teams that have true hopes of getting to the tournament. And when you're on the road in the Big Ten, I mean, those fans are crazy. I don't care whether you're playing at the Kohl's Center, you're playing at Mackey, you're playing at Assembly, wherever you're playing in the Big Ten, it's going to be tough to come away with a win. So it really didn't surprise me that much that Michigan lost. I think they're honestly a little bit of an overrated team to begin with. So I think they're going to have some more losses coming.
Michigan overrated.
Yeah.
John, they barely won last night.
Hey, man.
Right.
They played Minnesota last night, right?
Yep.
That's right.
We know Little Patino's up here. He's always got little tricks up his sleeve.
Well, and that one was at Michigan too. So I mean, even playing at home, it's just every game you got to bring your best in the Big Ten this year. If you don't,
so
you're liable to get knocked off.
Who's the class of the Big Ten? Top two teams in the Big Ten.
Well, top two are Michigan State and Michigan, no doubt about that.
Okay.
So I mean, don't get me wrong, Michigan's damn good, but I'm just saying, had they won that game, they were going to be number one in the country, and they're not that good. Problem with Michigan is they don't have depth. I mean, if they wind up with one injury, they're done. They got six guys that can really play, no question about that. But I mean, even John Teske, their big guy, like, you put him up against like a Zion or just elite big men from some of the elite teams across the country, he's going to get eaten up. Right.
I like Virginia's big dude. I can't think of his name, but I like him.
Salt?
Yes.
Tech Salt? Yeah, he's solid. Or like even Ethan Happ. I mean, Happ's an awesome, if you ask me. Now, his team's not as good, but and don't get me wrong, Michigan's still damn good, but they're just not number one in the country good. So,
okay. I got you.
Well,
Tennessee ain't number one in the country good either.
What's that?
Yeah, they are. Tennessee's good. I like them.
Number one?
They're pretty good. I mean, I think there's a group of six teams that have kind of distanced themselves from everybody else. Now, both Michigan and Tennessee are in that group, along with Duke, Virginia, Michigan State, and Gonzaga. Those are my six that I think one of those six is going all the way this year.
I like Gonzaga a lot. Yeah.
I thought they had their chance last year, and I liked the team last year, not as much this year with the Zags. You know, one thing, Nick, and you kind of talked about it when we talked beforehand, how tough just it is real quick in the Big Ten. You even talk about Rutgers. I mean, Rutgers has always been the seller of the Big Ten year after year, and they're beating Ohio State and Nebraska?
Right. Yeah. It's amazing. You got to bring it every single game. That's why I really do think that the Big Ten's drought of having a national champion might come to an end here. Now, you got some other really good teams out there too, but I just think – The Michigan and Michigan State, they're going to be so battle-tested when it comes to March. I mean, they're used to going against, you know, very, very good teams day in and day out. So I just think that bodes well for their success in the tournament.
Can the Big Ten have two number one seeds?
Ooh,
I think it's possible. I think it's
this year, even with the Pac-10 sucking, possible.
Well, I think in Michigan, Michigan State, both of them number one seeds, if it's possible.
It is. I don't think it'll happen, though. But my whole thing with the number one seeds, there's two that I almost think you can lock in right now, Tennessee and Gonzaga. Even though Gonzaga's not on the one line right now, I think they will be when it comes time for Selection Sunday, and Tennessee as well. And the main reason is their schedules the rest of the way. I mean, I don't see Gonzaga losing, maybe not even losing the rest of the way. If they do, they maybe lose one game the rest of the way. And Tennessee, you know, the SECs, they're okay, but it's just not as grueling as the ACC or the Big Ten. So my prediction is one team from the ACC, one team from the Big Ten, plus Tennessee and Gonzaga will wind up being the one seed.
Okay. Hey, all this Big Ten talk and nobody's mentioned IU.
Well, they're coming up. They're coming up, John. We've got stock rising teams and stock falling. So,
okay. Good.
First, we'll start with the stock rising. Nick, who do you got rising in the college basketball world?
Well, one of them, you got to look at Purdue right now. I mean, they've won six of their last seven after starting the year 6-5. You know, against some really good teams. I think they've played one of, if not the toughest schedule in the country to date. So I think that bodes well for them. You know, I was talking earlier about, you know, the Big Ten grueling season being beneficial for the tournament for Big Ten teams. Well, I think Purdue's non-conference schedule being so brutal was beneficial for them moving into the conference schedule, and that's why we're seeing them do so well right now. So their stock's definitely moving up. Another one is Louisville. They've won three straight. It was really sparked by that big 21-point win that they had down at Chapel Hill against the Tar Heels, which was a shocking result to me.
Yeah, that was crazy. I didn't see that coming.
Right. And they don't have any bad losses, and they've got two absolutely huge wins. So that one against North Carolina, and they also beat Michigan State earlier in the year. So I think that's a team to look out for, you know, as we move into February.
Okay.
And then one other team with a big up arrow right now is Kansas State. They've won five straight at this point, including wins at Iowa State, at Oklahoma, and then home to TCU and Texas Tech. And the Big 12 is another conference that day in and day out you're going to have to bring it. I mean, their worst teams are West Virginia and Oklahoma State, who are teams that can beat anybody in the conference. So I think the Big 12 is another conference to just kind of watch out for as the season unfolds here towards the end.
Yeah, didn't West Virginia just beat Kansas?
Yeah, I mean, I think any given day they can. West Virginia just beat somebody big. Iowa State, I think it was.
Yeah.
It was a top 15, top 20 team. So, yeah, I think they could beat Kansas. I don't think Kansas is really that great this year.
Yeah, I don't think they are talent-wise. And they just lost, what, Azubuike?
Right? Yeah, they're
nope. Season?
Is he out for the season?
Yeah, well, it said surgery out for the year. So, I mean, there's a chance possibly he comes back if they go deep in the tournament probably. But, yeah, I mean, we'll see. I like the Big 12. I like the Big 10. Those two, like you said, are dominant. The SEC, I think they got five teams I like. In the SEC, I think when I was trying to do my projections, I think I got five or six out of the SEC, and I almost got the same amount out of the Big East. I got Butler as one of the last ones getting in with that, and I thought last night they could have pushed them over the hump if they beat Villanova. It was prime for them to beat Nova, and obviously they can't beat Nova if they're not number one in the country, it seems like. So and then the last one you had on your list, Stock Rising, was Buffalo, which they lost a heartbreaker last night at the buzzer to Northern Illinois.
Yeah.
Are they going to have to win the MAC tournament to get in?
I don't think they will. I think they're going to be in. I mean, assuming they don't lose, you know, a few more. The MAC's a conference that, you know, typically is not that good, obviously. They're not bad. I mean, they got Buffalo. They got Toledo can play. Ball State's actually got a decent team this year. There's some talent there in the MAC this year.
Yeah, for sure. All right, looking at stock falling, who's hanging on for dear life as we get to February and early March?
Well, you know who we got to start off with on this list, right? My beloved Hoosiers.
The floor is yours, my friend. The floor is yours.
Yeah, and I even said it when they lost that game to Nebraska a couple weeks ago, that's just a season-defining type of loss. Just the way that it unfolded, too. Just ugly, ugly play. And then they basically just gave up down the stretch and really showed no heart. And I just think they're a seriously flawed team that really just doesn't look like they even want to be out there right now. It's very disappointing based on the level of talent that they've got there and really what that team should be, that they're just, you know, completely, completely shutting down right now. And now with Devontae Green getting suspended indefinitely, you know, it just looks like a complete nightmare of a season down the stretch for the Hoosiers, unfortunately.
Yeah, I watched a little bit of that game last night. I had it on one of the TVs, and my God, if they can just get somebody that can shoot, you got everybody standing around the perimeter. There's no motion offense. There's no continuity in that team, and none of them look like they want to be there. But here's my thing with even your savior, Romeo. I don't think I've seen the kid show any emotion yet.
Right.
You know, compared to some of these other star players for these other teams.
Yep. And from day one in Bloomington, he never showed any emotion. Now, at first, my thought was, well, that's just his demeanor, you know, which is fine. Like, you don't have to be a fiery player to be a good player. But, you know, my biggest thing with him is he's a complete one-trick pony. the guy can drive the ball with the best of them. He's elite talent at getting to the hoop and drawing fouls. And, you know, there's definitely a need for that. But anything outside of 15 feet, I mean, he's got to be shooting under 25%. I mean, the guy has absolutely no shot. And I'm sorry, but to play the wing at the next level, you got to be able to shoot the ball. So I don't see why all these pundits have him as a lottery pick. If I'm an NBA GM, I wouldn't even touch him in the second round of the draft.
Ooh.
Oh, wow. Oh,
ooh.
Man.
Oh, I like it. I like it.
How's
I
that
agree. I think this talk is falling.
He started off with a lot of fire, and a lot of hype. And like I said, he probably was a top five pick from the season's first start. But I still see I'll be honest with you. I still see Romeo Langford probably in the 12 to 15 range. But I do see some things. I mean, you're totally right. He's definitely on. It's on cruise control. I think they care. I think all athletes care about winning or losing. But he's not here for the IU experience. He's not here to, you know, if they play Kentucky there, he's not here to beat Kentucky. They wasn't even geared up to beat Purdue. That used to be a seriously rival game where it didn't matter. Even like the worst guy on the bench was trying to get in. So,
right.
The Purdue game, it wasn't embarrassing because it was close. It was kind of close, but it wasn't close enough to where IU even made a threat. To where you thought that, you know, that they were going to ever – there was no effort. What I see on the court is two guys, him and Juwan, basically when the scouts – they probably know what scouts are in, you know, say, in the crowd, and they're put on their display. They care about their stats. If they get a win, it's a secondary, you know, it's a secondary plus, but they care about their stats and what they did for that night. And that's what Archie Miller has put together. For this year,
so,
and it's gonna be it's a disappointing year for Bloomington. They're gonna have to scrap to get into the tournament.
Yep, I don't think they're making the tournament. I think they're gonna fall out.
They're gonna have. I thought they would beat Northwestern last night and have to win. I told a buddy of mine who's also a follower of college basketball. I said they're gonna have to win two games in the Big Ten tournament to get to the tournament. Otherwise, they're gonna be NIT bound.
Yeah,
I agree.
But Langford,
would your take be then on Duke? Because obviously, I mean, they've got three lottery picks, and yet they don't seem to have that same problem. Now, I think they're on a different level than Romeo, but, you know, they seem to care about one another and want to play as a team and do things the right way. But why is Romeo?
I think coaching.
Right, it's obviously coaching the environment. You so like Duke, it doesn't matter. Like we all know, Mike Krzyzewski walks on water in Durham. He does. You know what I mean? So yeah, Romeo Langford can listen to Scottie Pippen and shut it down. He could. You know, they got a little bit of like, hey man, competitive edge here. Him and Barrett can shut it down. They're gonna be number one and number two.
Right.
They're gonna be number one and number two. You know what? There's a lot of talk of like how you know Zion Williamson and RJ Barrett got to Duke, and there's a lot of different talk about how Langford got to IU. That might be why we had the problems we had.
Yeah.
And I also think the culture between what Krzyzewski has built at Duke over almost 30 some years, and then what Archie's got so far in year two. I mean, it's going to take some time from Archie. But I see a lot of IU fans already calling for Archie's head. That the team is no energy. There's no effort. I'm like, my God, just give it some time. You know.
Right. Yeah, I'm with you on that. There's no reason to be calling for his head. IU fans are so fickle. I mean, they expect a perfect season like 1976 every single year. And well, sorry guys, it's not that simple.
Right. Right.
Absolutely.
There's other teams out there that want to win too. So,
yeah, we'll get to the IU game here shortly. And Purdue, some of your other teams that are stocks falling on.
Yeah, so one more out of the Big Ten, the Ohio State Buckeyes. I mean, you mentioned their loss to Rutgers. They've got four straight losses at this point. I know they're on right now playing the Boilermakers, so we'll see what winds up happening with that one. But I think they're in serious danger of missing the tournament as well, unfortunately.
Yeah, absolutely.
Ohio State, they could play the first four games of this season. I don't know what happened.
Yeah, I don't know either.
At one point, they were ranked like 15th or top 15, and I've got a good buddy that's a big Ohio State sports fan, and he was telling me they're the most overrated top 15 team he's seen. they didn't play anybody in the non-conference, so, yeah, they racked up a bunch of wins against nobodies. And once it comes time to play with the big boys, they couldn't hang.
Okay.
So we'll see. Yeah. I mean, I still think they've got a chance to right the ship. It doesn't seem like self-destruction the way it is in Bloomington right now anyway. But I think they're in serious jeopardy of being NIT bound as well.
Yeah, absolutely. You got Florida State. If they could just had somebody that guarded Cam Reddish on that three-pointer, they may be a different talk right now than being dropping out.
That's right. I mean, they were top 15 at one point too, maybe even top 10. And obviously that loss to Duke, just a heartbreaker. Truthfully, I think they should have won that game. They probably deserved to win that game. And then they let that spiral into losses against Pittsburgh and Boston College as well. So I think they'll right the ship. I think they've got some serious talent, and they'll be fine. But they're not a top 10 team the way they were just a few weeks ago.
Yeah,
they
got a good win, I think, against Purdue as well,
yeah,
I believe.
Yep. And then the last team I've got that their season might be on a little bit of life support as well is Seton Hall out of the Big East. They were sitting at 11-3 just a couple weeks ago with big wins over Kentucky and Maryland. So they looked like a lock at that point, but they've lost four of their last five, including a couple against DePaul and one against Providence. So throwing up some pretty ugly L's there for the selection committee to be looking at come Selection Sunday that isn't going to bode too well for them either.
Man,
yeah.
Kentucky got some ugly L's on their resume, but they're going to make it because it's Kentucky.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, they'll be in.
Yeah, they'll get in. They've only got, three losses right now, Kentucky.
Yeah,
they've lost to Duke, Seton Hall, and Alabama. So those really aren't that bad of losses. They haven't played much in terms of schedule, so they don't have that many great wins either.
I agree.
I'll be hoping that they don't. If something tells me they will.
Going to the big game we just had this Saturday, I know I enjoyed it, obviously being a Purdue fan in general. IU I'll follow and cover because it's Crossroads. But IU-Purdue ends up winning 70-55. Nick, let's get your thoughts first, and then we'll go to Jonathan. Thoughts on the IU-Purdue game?
Yeah, I mean, it's just such a glaring difference between the way Purdue and IU looks at this game every year. And, Jonathan, you touched on this a little bit earlier, that for Purdue, they circle this game on the calendar every year, both games if there's two of them, which there should be every year, but that's a sidebar. But anyway, I've even heard, too, that Matt Painter, the days and even the week leading up to an IU game, he blares, basically Gene Cady, speeches and whatnot, over the PA system while they're at practice, and just fuels the fire of the hatred of IU. And these are our rivals. We have to come prepared, and we got to get up for this game. Versus IU, they go out there, and it's just another game on the calendar for them. They really don't care. And that pisses me off because, back in the 90s when, you had Knight, you had Katie, you had Big Dog versus Calvert. It was a serious, serious rivalry back then. And, IU just doesn't seem to be taking it seriously anymore, and it's very discouraging to me.
Yeah, I agree. Like you said, it's some of the luster has fallen off, and even nationally. I mean, you had the game on Fox, but these games used to be on evening games on ESPN or on CBS, if you had a 2 o'clock game on Fox, and I understand Fox is trying to compete back with the college basketball world, but yeah, there's just no, from where the IU team sees Purdue to where the IU fans see Purdue, there's two different perspectives. And the fan base obviously wants them, you know what, we want to beat Purdue every time. Maybe they just said, hell, they'll beat us up here, we already know, and then we'll beat them down there. You know, who knows? But it, there's definitely – and Purdue got pretty hyped up for this game. You know, the players were slapping the floors. There was all the stuff you used to see the jumping around. And Don Fisher said it perfect yesterday. I was listening to the Dan Dockett show, another show I'm going to plug. And Fisher said he knew – that they were in trouble during pregame intros and stuff because IU went around and when they introduced them, they did their little handshake and they went over, shake the referee's hand. And they would just stand there when it was Purdue and they were getting ready. They were slapping the floor. They were raising their hands, getting everybody up and going. And that's when he said, you know what, this team's not ready. And I thought that was pretty eye opening, especially from a guy that sees IU basketball day in and day out over how many years.
Yep. Yeah, I knew they were in trouble when they got on the bus to go up to Lafayette.
Jonathan, what was your thoughts on the game?
You know, the great Brad Stevens said from a coaching standpoint, we all had to be going in the same direction. In order for a team to be successful, we all had to be going in the same direction. IU, from a team standpoint, everybody's not going in the same direction. From the coaching to the two star players, into the other players on them, everybody's not going the same direction. It's not, you know, people, IU people are basically kind of calling for Archie Miller's job. I know it's early. They're calling for his job because he's not an IU guy, but the problem is the athletic director and then the athletic department, the athletic director, they don't want an IU guy. So you're not ever at this point going to get that, what you got from Purdue. Matt Painter, he's a Purdue guy. He's played in these games before. He knows what, you know what I'm saying, what it means to play versus them, what it means to beat IU. Heck, that game might mean if they lose tonight or lose another game is critical, that game might be a resume builder for them to get in the tournament because it's a rivalry game. It carries weight, you know. Yep. But I don't think that's preached. I mean, you know, I'm not saying he's a total outsider because he was a great – Archie Miller was a great coach. Coaching prospect to bring in. The Dayton Flyers were on the radar, right? He was going to get somebody's head. He was going to get somebody's head coaching time, Division One, right? Not a 1A. He was going to get somebody's program to run. IU came a calling, but he hasn't been able to embrace into the culture of what coaching at that university is, and to transition that to the players. And like. You know, and that's kind of where we're at. So those dudes and everybody. I don't poo-poo the talent that is left from Tom Crean. With Tom Crean left, Tom Crean is best the Sensational Seven. You know what I'm saying? Alan Henderson and Eric Anderson and Brian Evans. No, but them dudes ain't chumps. They just can't play together for whatever reason. They're not playing together, and they're not. And Romeo Langford ain't giving up 100%. And that's what it is. So they might lose another game. They're not gonna lose all the games. So they might kind of limp into the Big Ten tournament. But that's kind of where they're at. Purdue is on the upswing. Purdue, I can see them getting to the tournament. I can't necessarily see them playing a second game. I can't see them playing in like two weekends. I don't know if they're that good or not. They're still kind of young. You know what I mean? But they're definitely on the program on the watch next year and the year after that because they'll be right back in contention for the Big Ten title.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great segue. Once again, John, you're two for two tonight on segues. So Nick, looking at the Indiana teams that we have here in the state, projecting them for the NCAA field kind of right now, what they can or need to do. Where do you have these teams currently?
Yeah, so right now I've got three teams from the state in my field right now. The top one being the Boilermakers. I've got them as a 7 right now. I think they just need to just continue to what they've been doing. Play through their star Carson Edwards. That guy's an absolute stud. As I'm watching him get a nice assist to Harms right now. But Purdue, you know, they're going to be fine. They're doing great. Again, just keep playing through Edwards, and he's going to get them far. And the one thing that's nice about the tournament is it's all about the guards, right? So if you've got, you know, one of the best point guards in the country, yeah, I'm not going to say the sky's the limit. They're not going to win the whole thing, but I definitely can see them getting to the Sweet 16, and if not, you know, putting a scare into people to get to the Elite Eight, maybe even a Final Four, if Carson's up to the bill and puts the team on his back. I think he can carry him there. And then the other two teams are, you know, we've already kind of touched on, obviously, the Hoosiers. I've got them hanging on. This was actually before the game last night. I had them as a 10 seed. So, you know, throw that loss into the mix. I mean, they're going to be right there on the bubble, it looks like, come Selection Sunday. And the Boilermakers, the Bulldogs, Butler, I've got as a 10 seed as well right now. You know, obviously a hurt losing to Villanova last night as well, but I think they can rebound. I think they'll be okay. They'll stabilize, but, you know, it's going to be tough for them as well, just because the Big East is still a tough conference. So to me, I mean, really the only team that's got any kind of chance of being alive in the second round of the tournament is the Boilermakers from this state, unfortunately. It pains me to say that, but it's accurate.
Yeah. When I was looking at the teams as well, kind of putting my projections in, I got Purdue as a 6, tied with you. I actually have IU as a 9, even with the loss. I think looking at the schedule, if they also get healthy, and that's one thing I don't think you touched on, was they haven't really been healthy. They haven't had a full team in a long time. I think it's been the first 3 games of the year, and they finally had some hurt. But, I've got IU sitting at a 9 seed. I've got Purdue at a 6, and then even Butler. Butler I have as a 10 as well. So, Purdue, I think IU and Purdue could get to a second round. If IU can get it clicking to tournament time, I mean, you've seen it before. Anything is possible. I don't think Purdue makes it past the second weekend. I think they may even lose that first game on that following Thursday or Friday night, whoever they would probably have in their region. Because, and here's my problem, as you said with Carson Edwards, as he's they're going to go as far as he leads them, but they do need a consistent scorer as that backup guy, whether it be Grady Eifert, whether it be Ryan Klein. Those two aren't always consistent. Nojel Eastern sometimes has been up there as a second scorer, but and even Harms or Boudreaux.
Williams.
But if they do not get a second scorer with Edwards, because he's not going to hit every shot, and we saw what the game was at the Michigan game where he wasn't hitting, and they didn't have any other answer, and they got blitzed up in Ann Arbor. So, we'll see what happens with the rest of the season with the Boilers. I mean, obviously they're going to learn and grow, even with the Hoosiers. I think IU makes it, and I don't think it's just because of the record. I also think name recognition. I think it hypes the March Madness tournament, because if you tell me the NCAA committee is going to sit there, and we've talked about this in our other March Madness shows, they're going to sit there and they see Indiana or they see Wolford for an 11 seed. Wolford's played a hell of a season. They've beaten great teams. But economically, where are they going to get more money from the NCAA? And unfortunately, it's a big cash cow. It's going to be the Hoosiers.
Why are you talking bad about Wolford in my mouth?
Hey, you know, Wolford's good.
Mon Mouth, Colgate, Lehigh. I love those teams.
Yeah.
Nick,
the last thing we'll talk about before we go to whatever you want to wrap up on, conference talk. Obviously, these conferences are going to make and break. Some of these teams are going to make and break whatever conference they're in for the March Madness and where they could be seated if they make it. So give us some of your strongest conferences and then some of, obviously, your weakest conferences.
Yeah, so, I mean, starting off – you know, the best conference, and most of the talking heads have been saying this all year as well, is the Big Ten. I don't think there's any doubt. I mean, as I said earlier, 11 out of the 14 teams in the Big Ten legitimately have tournament aspirations. I mean, that's just a ridiculous number. You know, the other thing that I find interesting about the Big Ten is there's that many good teams, and yet who are we talking about being a next-level prospect in the Big Ten? I mean, there really isn't that much NBA talent in the Big Ten, and yet here they are, you know, consistently putting out great teams year after year, and, you know, this year mm-hmm. being one of the prime examples of that. So, mm-hmm. you know, it just sheds light on why I love the Big Ten and Big Ten basketball so much. This year is just the perfect example of it for me.
Yeah, I agree.
A couple other conferences then, ACC, you know, every year that ACC is damn good. I mean, when you got Duke and Carolina in there, you know those two are going to be up there every year. So it's a very top-heavy conference, but, you know, definitely some of the best teams that the country has to offer. So I'm seeing probably 8 or 9 teams out of the ACC getting in. And then I touched on the Big 12 a little bit earlier as well. Top to bottom, honestly, the Big 12 might be the best. You know, when you're looking at West Virginia being their worst team and they're still ranked 85 on KenPom and 86 in the net rankings, I mean, there's just, you know, just like the Big 10, like I said earlier, there's just not a night off in the Big 12.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. John, hold on to your butts. I know when we talk Big 12, I know you've got some hope with Big 12.
Kansas is going to win. They're going to win. But Kansas is going to win, as they always do. They're going to win. They're going to win the whole thing.
Okay.
The whole thing?
The whole thing?
I'm sorry. Kansas is going to win the Big 12. That's what I mean by that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
You're really going out on a limb on that one.
No.
I know, right? All right, and then this one, actually, we talk about the weakest conferences right now who just aren't showing up at all this season. A real big disappointment. There's been several times me and Jonathan have talked about this conference particularly being probably the worst. And, Nick, you have it number one on your list here, the Pac-12. Give us your take on the Pac-12.
Oh, it's pathetic is what it is. You know, the fact that they don't have anybody in, I think, the top 40 on KenPom. Their top team is Washington, who's sitting at 47 on Ken Palm's rankings. They barely even have one team in the top 50 of the country. It's insane. I've never seen a supposedly power conference be that weak in one year. You know, the other interesting fact, 9 out of the 14 Big Ten teams this year would probably be favored to outright win the Pac-12 this year. So you're saying Ooh. There's 9 out of the 14 teams in this conference that are better than any team in the Pac-12. It's just mind-boggling, quite frankly.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So I think the argument, I think the Pac-12 is going to wind up with 2 or 3 in, but with the fact that they're so pitiful this year, I think it should be a one-bid league.
One and done. John, what's your thoughts on the Pac-12?
I'm trying to figure out who. I always look at the landscape and try to figure out who's going to coach UCLA, and then the Pac-12 will fall. They'll fall into place after we found that out. That saga is answered. UCLA's head coach. There's the names like Steve Kerr been thrown out. That's not going to happen.
Hoiberg.
I don't know. Hoiberg might be fine counting his money Chicago gave him. I can see Hoiberg. He fits the mold. He's an NBA guy, former NBA guy. He's a young guy. If it was me, I would go with Musselman. I would. But I don't know if that's the splash that they want to make. You know what I mean? I don't know if that's a big enough splash.
I can't even remember who they were talking about.
Crazy Vitale, Rick Pitino. I'm like, whoa, man, Dick, you're crazy.
You know who I think they go with? And it's a shot in the dark, but just based on the pedigree, and we've seen it in the past with Wojciechowski going to Marquette and Chris Collins going to Northwestern from Duke. It's not going to be very long from now. John Shire, who's a Duke assistant, is going to be getting a job. And if Coach K is going to give that recommendation to UCLA, respect for respect, I can see John Shire as the next head coach.
Man, woo! Josh, get UCLA?
That'd be crazy.
Why not give a young guy? You've given the big guy, Steve Alford, a shot, and you've seen what happened with that. I honestly think they fired him too soon. I think they should have let this season play out and seen what the hell happens.
Well, you know what, John Shire, I don't know, but he got to get a middle job before he gets UCLA, I would think.
Yeah, I would kind of agree with you on that. That'd be a big jump for him.
Now, I know we'd all agree. I thought it was pretty funny when I saw Georgia getting thumped by 30 to Tennessee a couple weeks ago, and Tom Crean just sitting on that sideline not knowing what the hell to do.
Oh, I'm sure he wasn't sitting. He had to have been pacing back and forth.
Oh, yeah, he was obviously pacing. But, yeah, you said it, Nick, perfectly. The Pac-12, and Jonathan, you refuse to call them the Pac-12. You call them the Pac-10 still.
You said
they are pack-thetic, and that I like that.
Oh,
that is a proper name.
Yeah.
Nice.
So, and then your last one?
So I got the Big East on this list as well. It's not so much that the Big East is a bad conference this year. It's just that they're down a little from where they usually are. And I think there's a possibility that they might only get four in, maybe five. So it's just a little bit of a down year for the Big East. Nothing that's that big of a deal. They'll be back next year, and you know it won't be a big deal. But the one other conference I just kind of wanted to shed a little bit of light on, because when I was doing a little bit of research, I found this pretty fascinating, and it has to do with the conference realignment that we've seen over the last decade or so, and Conference USA. So I went back and looked, and 15 years ago, back in 2004, this was a six-bid league. You know, they had teams like Marquette, Louisville, Cincinnati, Memphis. I mean, they had some serious, serious teams in their conference. And now you look at them, they have one team ranked in the top 100 of KenPom's ranking. And that's Old Dominion at 96. I mean, so we're talking, like, clearly just a one-bid league, but we're talking, like, a lower half conference in the country, which is insane, you know, to see how much they've fallen over the course of 15 years. And they can thank college football for that, that's damn sure.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it's a shame. I used to love watching the old Conference USA, especially Cincinnati. You had Kenyon Martin, you had Sam Logan, even Jason Maxey and all them. I liked Cincinnati back in the day. But yeah, it's sad to see kind of how that conference has fallen down. It's maybe in the future. And there's some other conferences that. You know, the Atlantic 10, they right now, I only have a couple teams getting out of the Atlantic 10, even.
Yep.
And I was scared that the Pac, or excuse me, I was scared the Big East was going to turn into the what happened to the Conference USA. Luckily, I think the people in New York will keep that from happening ever. And honestly, if Butler could get out of the Big East, I think that would be their best bet. I think they went too far, too early.
I said the exact same thing. Butler, I feel like, needs to go back to a small conference like the – they won't go back to the MAC. I'm just saying they need to go back to a small conference like the MAC. You know what I mean?
No, I completely disagree. I think them going to the Big East is the best thing that could have happened for them. The Big East isn't going anywhere as far as a basketball conference. And not only that, basketball is king at every single one of those schools. So basketball runs the show. It is their breadwinner at every one of those schools. Now, I get college basketball isn't the industry that college football is, but there's still a lot of money in college basketball. And, you know, you go to any one of those Big East schools and you're a star basketball player, you are the guy on their campus, period, end of story. So I think there's a lot that you can use to your advantage from a recruiting standpoint. And really, you know, you look at the Big East, there's 10 teams in it, and they're probably going to get four or five in. So, you know, you figure as long as you're a top half Big East team, being Butler, you're going to get into the tournament.
Okay.
You're right.
If I could choose, I would choose the American. I'd move them to the American Conference, American Athletic.
And why?
With Cincinnati, Memphis, Temple.
It's big time, man. It's as big as it gets when it comes to college basketball.
Well, I think Brandon wants them to play like area teams where they would have more natural rivalries against, instead of like playing against St. John's.
You see
what I'm saying?
Well,
like how
I completely agree with the whole regional aspect of it. I mean, hell, look at the AAC. What don't they have, or which conference is it? It's got like San Diego State in the same conference as Tulsa and UCF and fucking UConn. Like, I mean, they're all over the freaking country.
I'm looking at American. right now: Houston, Cincinnati, UCF, SMU, Tulsa, East Carolina, Tulane, Connecticut. Yeah, it's all over the board in the Americans. Yeah. One jumbled right. conference.
Right. And I agree. I mean, from a fan perspective, yeah, I wish Butler was in a conference that had some more teams around here, you know, like a Cincinnati or – well, I guess they do have Xavier, so you got that. But,
yeah,
I mean, from a fan perspective, I completely agree. But from a Butler basketball program and the future of Butler basketball, I think they couldn't be in a better situation.
Okay.
Nick, do you see Valpo getting in out of the Missouri Valley?
No, I don't. Well, I mean, when your conference tournament you're in, obviously, but that's the only way. The Missouri Valley's only getting one in. And Loyola, even though, I mean, they've put up quite a few losses this year. So I know they were everybody's, you know, fun Cinderella last year, and it was hell of a run. But if I'm you and you see Loyola on the 12 or 13 line and you want to, you know, pull that upset, I would not this year. I'd recommend against them, unfortunately.
Absolutely. Ball State even beat them. Shout out Cardinals beating Loyola.
Hey. Chirp.
Absolutely. Nick, any last things you want to add that, any tidbits?
Well, I think, you know, as we go into the tournament, the one thing that I kind of like to look at are sort of teams and individuals that you might not have heard of before that I'm expecting to make an impact come March. You know, a couple of them, two of them are Buffalo and Nevada who made a splash last year. So, you know, they're bringing back a lot of good talent from those teams that advanced in the tournament last year. So it'll be exciting to see. I mean, both of them will get in. I don't think there's any doubt. And it'll be exciting to see, you know, what can they do now that they're going to be a top eight seed. So they're going to go into the first round, you know, being favored and not playing that underdog role. So I think that always kind of throws those smaller schools for a little bit of a loop when, you know, they're maybe a six or a seven seed going up against, you know, a big conference school who's a 10 or an 11 and supposed to be the underdog. It's that role reversal that kind of gets you. So I'll be excited to watch those two teams. And then the ones that, you know, I kind of expect to make a name for themselves this March in the first go around. One of them is a team that we've seen before is Murray State. They've got a kid, Ja Morant, that he's starting to get some national pub right now. But, I mean, this guy's averaging 20 points and 10 assists a game right now, which I know he's playing in a weaker conference. But this guy's legit top five material in the NBA draft next year. So,
he looks like Steve Francis 2.0.
Steve Francis? I've heard a lot of people comparing him to Russell Westbrook. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's because they don't remember Steve Francis. He's not as long as Russell Westbrook, but yeah, he's gonna be top. He's top five for sure.
Yeah. He's fun to watch too. So I'll be excited. You know, hopefully Murray State can make the tourney. I think they will. It'll be interesting. You know, say they get to their conference championship and lose. You know, to see whether they're gonna get the call on Selection Sunday or not. I actually have a feeling that similar to what you were saying, Brandon, earlier about IU, you know, when it comes down to it and they have the pick between an IU or a Wofford, like you said, or some other small school. Well, I think Murray State's going to carry a little bit of that this year just because people want to see this kid play. So it'll be interesting.
Trey Young, in Oklahoma.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. I mean, right now, Murray State, their net rating is 45. So, I mean, they're clearly in right now. They won nine of their last 10. They're 13-2, 7-0 at home and 6-2 on the road. But undefeated in the conference, they're looking good. And I think it should be an easy conference for them to win.
Yeah, I mean, problem is they just haven't played anybody. I mean, I'm looking at their schedule. The two teams that they did play, they played Alabama and Auburn and lost both of them. Lost by six points and by 5 points, though. So, I mean, you know, give them credit. They were in these games. It's not like they got blown out. But you look at the rest of their schedule and what's the best team they've played, maybe Evansville, Wright State. You know, it's just there's nothing else there. So they better not lose any more games. They lose another game or two, and they're going to be flirting with on the outside looking in.
I think the next one, and you talk about wanting to see this Ja Morant, to check him out, well, perfect game is this Thursday night. They play a 12-4 Belmont team on ESPNU at 9 o'clock. If you get a chance to check it out, check it out. Belmont's a team not to sleep on as well. Belmont's been in the tournament year in, year out lately, so this should be a good game.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. That's probably the toughest team they'll play the rest of the way. Good news is for them, it's at home. So still would expect they win that game. But yeah, I agree. It should be a good one.
So the
next name that I wanted to throw out there as well, and, God, I hope they make the tourney because this guy's name alone is just classic, and that's Frankie Ferrari out of San Francisco. San Francisco is in the same conference, WCC, as Gonzaga. So they already played once, and I believe that was at San Francisco, and Gonzaga got the best of them. But San Francisco, gave them a tough game. They were in it late in that game. The score didn't reflect it because Gonzaga kind of went on a run real late in that game. But anyway, Frankie Ferrari, he's their point guard, kind of runs the show. Reminds me a lot of Steve Nash. I don't think he's obviously as good as Steve Nash, but he's got that San Francisco team playing well. So I'm really hoping that we see their name called on Selection Sunday. I think that could be a team to watch out for.
Yeah, absolutely. They're sitting at a net ranking of 43 right now. They've 8-2 the last 10 games. 15-3 overall, looking good. Like you said, they've got one game postponed. I think they should end up making it up, hopefully, if they can find some time. But Arizona State, that was going to be a big one for them on their resume. It was postponed back in November. They haven't played it. I think it was probably the forest fires or the wildfires going on is what canceled that the last time. They played Buffalo, and they lost to Buffalo by 4. So I think the Dons can get in, and I think they'd be a good showing. I think the West Coast Conference is going to get those at least two teams in.
Yeah,
I think they're going to replace.
I hope they do. Really do.
I think they replace St. Mary's in the end. Is what I think they do. So.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. And then the last team to watch out for in March. You mentioned them earlier. We've actually kind of kept throwing their name around, but it's Wofford. It's a team that not many people obviously know about, but they've only got 4 losses on the season. Those 4 losses are to North Carolina, Oklahoma, Kansas, and Mississippi State. So that's 4 teams that easily could be in the Sweet 16. So I really think this Wofford team, if they do wind up getting in the tourney, is one to watch out for. And there's your free advice from me. Come tourney time is maybe sneak them into at least round of 32, maybe even Sweet 16. Who knows?
Okay.
Wofford.
There you are. Watch out for them. Hey, Nick Peterson's not the best in the biz for no reason, people. He just gave us a ton of information that you're not going to find anywhere else. And this guy is damn good. Nick, what did you do last year in the NCAA tournament? How many correct teams?
Oh, shit. I don't know. It was either 65 or 66. I think I missed – or maybe I had 67. Was, I don't know. It was pretty good. Pretty
I think
good.
You had
I mean, 66 I keep...
67 of the 68. That's damn good, people.
That's pretty good.
So, my last question to you, Nick. I have the question from my perspective of and I know other people probably thinking the same thing. So with your rating system and ranking system you have this year that you do every year for your Excel spreadsheets and such, how much different is it this year from the RPI rating to using the new net formula that the College Basketball Committee is using?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say I like the net ranking a lot better than the RPI. RPI, to me, I don't know, there were always some outliers, and there were some teams that, everybody else thinks they're a top 25 team, whether it's, the coaches or AP poll, Ken Pom, other ranking systems, and yet their RPI might be like in the 80s or something. And so I didn't really understand RPI. Not that I really know the inner workings of net either, but it just seemed like a better ranking system to me in my experience here so far this year.
Okay, perfect. And then one last one. I know you've skipped over on your sheet, but, I think we got to give this team their credit. I mean, they're 18-1 right now and a net ranking of 7th, and they're ranked the Houston Cougars. I mean, I picked them last year to go pretty far in our March Madness special, and they failed me, but – What's your thoughts on the Cougars?
Well, my thought is they have the second sleaziest coach in the country behind Mr. Calipari down in Lexington.
Oh, man.
But that's a story for another day. They're definitely a very good team and playing very, very well right now. And there's no question they're going to be in the tourney. I mean, they've got wins over LSU, Oregon, Utah State, Oklahoma State. So, not your top tier teams, but teams that are, at least middle of the road, and possibly could make the tourney. While I'm hoping that they have an early exit, I think Samson might be able to get them to the Sweet 16 this year.
Okay. Perfect. Nick, you're the best in the biz, my friend, and a lot of great information. And we'll continue as we lead up to Selection Sunday to have you on here with more great information. And then obviously we'll have our big March Madness selection show with you and then Jonathan obviously included here. And we'll go through those brackets.
Awesome. Sounds good. Looking forward to it.
All right,
thank you,
Nick. Absolutely, Nick. We'll get you back on here in another week or two. We'll see how the landscape has changed and what new things we've got. All right, buddy?
Sounds good. Hey, thanks, guys. We'll see you.
Yep. Take care.
Good.
All right. That was Nick Peterson, our Crossroads Sports college basketball guru. Jonathan, I don't think you can get any other better information. The guy knows his stuff. He's done it year in, year after year out. Go ahead and get your pen and paper ready. I told you. You can go back and play this on iTunes and listen and get your picks ready for March Madness.
Sounded like I got some solid picks there, yep.
Absolutely. So before we wrap up, we've got about 15 minutes or so. John, let's go over the NBA. Let's first talk about the surging Houston Rockets. And my God, James Harden, let's score 50 every night.
Yeah, you have to appreciate James Harden, even though he only plays one side of basketball. He only plays the offensive side of basketball. The way he plays offense, the way and the shots he's able to make, either jump shooting or mid range, either shooting threes, which he shoots a lot of threes, or even going to the free throw line, or even finishing athletically around the rim. He's got the whole arsenal. The only thing that kind of bothers me about his game is that the referees and the league have kind of tucked their whistle in about, his traveling. But one of his step back, it's a travel. But but for the most part, if you take that aside, he's usually good for like two travels a game, and it's real quick. Like you can't even. It's in real time, so it's kind of hard. I guess they got NFL referee eyes, too, in the NBA. It's kind of hard to call, but he's capable of hitting almost any shot. And from like, I don't know, Duke Brandon, when he retired to hit some, he's going to be the greatest three-on-three player ever. If that league is still around, by the time he retired. But like I said, he's put the team on his back. They've lost some games too, because they have a lack of talent or lack of offensive punch or whatever. But they beat some teams. They would probably beat Golden State. I know like last couple of weeks. I know they lost by almost 30 or so the other night against Philadelphia. But he is a marvel to watch offensively, and I mean, they're kind of a fun team to watch because if he ain't hitting threes, Eric Gordon's hitting threes and PJ Tucker's hitting threes. So what they say, the chicks did the long ball. That's what they used to say back in the 90s, and the long ball is the 3-pointer in the NBA. So the surge Houston Rockets, will that sustain over the length of a season and into the playoffs? No, but it is fun to watch. It's fun basketball to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. It was I watched a good one the other night with the Lakers and the Rockets. Obviously, LeBron didn't play, but it was a good game. And Harden just throwing up the points and my God, they're moving up the standings. It took some time, but this team's starting to click. And we'll see. I don't think they're good enough to get to the Western Conference Finals.
No.
I think they get knocked out in the semis, but
Brandon, him and. I know it's going to Florida. I studied this, dude. Him and Westbrook need one another. Now, they do. I know somebody would say, how could you put those two gunslingers playing together? Well, I don't think Westbrook had a game, my gosh, last week where he shot 7 for 30. I think the same game Paul George still had took 19 shots, but Westbrook took 7 for 30. That means he don't trust nobody else on the team to shoot other than him and Paul George. So
yeah.
I say Harden is better when he had Harden, and the team is better when they have another playmaker. They have an older playmaker, a broken down playmaker in Chris Paul. And like I said, the team is better. We've seen it on film. The team is better.
John, I got a moment. We got breaking news. It's regarding the Indiana Pacers. The Pacers right now are playing the Toronto Raptors at home. Pacers are winning, but scary moment and prayers right now. Victor Oladipo went down with an apparent leg injury, and they have carried him off on a stretcher. Off the court. They're back to playing right now, but there was about a 10-minute delay in the game. And Victor was obviously conscious, and he was sitting up on the stretcher. But the look on McMillan, the look on this fan base, the look on Victor's place is not good. I'm really hoping that it's not as scary as it looked, but the team is just – right now it's not looking good. Looks like a knee injury. He has left the floor on the stretcher.
Oh man, no, that's not good. That's not good. And he's been dealing with knee injuries all season.
So with that said, and hopefully God is not too bad, John, and he'll just be out for a little bit of time. Now with the trade deadline coming up, where does Indiana look? Should they look, or do we just kind of do it?
I saw some trade scenario. They had Mike Conley coming back to the Pacers. I told you last week, I'm comfortable with this team. Like, I am. Is Mike Conley better than any point guard on this roster right now? Yeah. And you'd be into a contract that you probably wouldn't be happy if you're from a Pacers standpoint and not a fan standpoint. If you're a Pacers standpoint, you'd be into a contract that you're not happy into playing out. You know what I'm saying? You'll be stuck into a 2-year contract of playing Mike Conley over $20-25 million. I do believe.
Right.
I think you do 25 and 26. You got 2 more years on this contract. If you can find, I mean, it's not like the Pacers have poo-poo platters. On the back end, TJ Leaf has shown a lot of upswing. You know what I mean? He's just a young guy that needs some time to develop and get out there. But he's playing behind, you know what I'm saying, power forward and small forward here with the Pacers. So it's not like whatever we could trade, either an expiring contract or a young face would be terrible. If Victor Oladipo is out though, the Pacers will be faced with making a decision. Do they move one of their expiring contracts? They have at least three, I do believe, in Darren Carlson, Bojan, and Thad Young.
Yeah.
So it'd be really interesting.
I'm seeing video. I'm looking at Twitter right now regarding the injury. Apparently, there's like a blood-curdling scream from –
Okay.
Oladipo. John, it's not good.
It's bad.
I mean, once he was on the stretcher going back, he kind of raised his hands to kind of get the crowd kind of back involved. But I am concerned.
Okay. First and foremost, I hope Victor Oladipo is right. It's okay. An MRI, everything's fine. But this team has got a lot of depth. And before we start tearing up the team, let's make sure Victor Oladipo is fine. And like I said, we should be pretty good. We have to start thinking about, you know what I'm saying, after that, what we want to go further.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, back, and unfortunately, we we'll get back to what we were talking about. I just thought it was right for us to kind of dive right into it. I just saw it on the TV.
Right.
You go from one obviously hurt player now with Victor Oladipo to another one who should be calling it a career, Carmelo Anthony, traded and then released by Chicago Bulls. The Bulls going to put a jersey up there like the Hawks will for Carmelo. And then now he's a free agent. The Lakers, obviously, once again, are the top contender to signing.
He has to go to a California team. Has to. I don't foresee Golden State, you know what I'm saying, making a spot for him to get to Golden State. They don't need another shooter. They have enough shooters. They have enough people to figure out how to, you know what I'm saying, get shots for. I don't necessarily foresee him going to join forces with the Clippers or Sacramento. It'd be nice. It'd be nice pickups for him, you know what I mean, for them to pick him up. He has to go to a California team, and that kind of leaves the Lakers. And they don't necessarily need him. It would be a pickup. They didn't have to tear up the team to get him. He'd have to come in as a reserve, though, wouldn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, he won't be a starter.
And they kind of need something with LeBron. Who knows what's going on? That's a whole nother segment. Why LeBron taking so much time off? You know what I'm saying? There's a whole lot of speculation. Are the Lakers, you know what I'm saying, looking at dealing some of their young youth talent or whatever? I think the Lakers are just trying to get everybody healthy. Really, that's what I think. They're trying to get Rondo back out there and trying to make sure LeBron doesn't come back and rush things to where something might pop again if they get into it like a streak. The Lakers, Brandon, the Lakers are good enough to beat anybody in the West not named Golden State Warriors in a 7-game series with LeBron James at 100%. They can beat any team. You name them, line them up. They can beat any team not named the Golden State Warriors. So with that being said, they might have to look in the mirror too and see, do they want to bring Carmelo Anthony on to see how far they can get against Golden State? Or do they want to make a change and trade off one of their young pieces to see if they can make that championship run a little bit more interesting this year? I don't think they do that this year. I think they wait over the summer and see what happens. But it looks like Carmelo's probably going to be a Laker.
Yeah. Oh, man, John. My whole head is right now spinning with this Pacers thing. I got the Paul George scenario going through my head right now that we just did – how many years ago? 4 years ago?
Right.
I don't know where you go. Like you said, the contracts are way too much. Yes, this team stayed afloat while he was gone. But Carmelo, going back to Carmelo, I think it is a California team. Like you said, the Lakers, Kings, definitely not the Warriors. They already got too much going on with Boogie there. My God, John, they scored 60 points in the first quarter the other night. 60.
it's a little unfair. It's a little unfair with the Golden State Warriors. It's a little unfair.
Yeah. So, last thing before we get off this evening, we've had a lot of good talk this evening. I thought it's been, but it's this weekend's a big weekend, and I got to play the intro for it because I got to have your prediction.
Oh, my God.
It's time for the Royal Rumble this weekend. You got WWE Rumble, Men's Rumble, Female Rumble. I know you're going to get watching because I know you are a big Finn Balor guy. And now that he's matched up to face Lesnar, anything I'm seeing, he could take the title off of Lesnar.
There had to be some type of written-in type of screw job where they've booked Brock Lesnar so heavy that the only two guys that have gone over on him in like the last, what, 6-7 years has been John. I don't think John Cena went over on him. Was like Roman Reigns. I just don't foresee. I like Finn Balor. I just don't foresee him going over on Brock Lesnar unless it's going to be some type of screw job where they change up or Paul. I don't know. As far as winning the Rumble, I think the Rumble's won by a SmackDown guy.
You think it's going to be a SmackDown guy?
I think it's going to be a SmackDown guy that wins the Rumble, and then they challenge for the SmackDown title, not the Raw title.
Okay. I think I am going to go with Rollins just because I think he hasn't won it. He's one of them that would be a good representation. Shinsuke won it from SmackDown last year. That's why I think I'm staying away from Shinsuke. But Rollins is that type of headline factor that can go in there and do it and get it done, give that prestige with it. And who knows what can happen, because you still have Fastlane and then Elimination Chamber leading up to Mania now. It's not just straight from Rumble to Mania. So a lot of things could happen. Strowman, I don't think he's fighting, because I don't think he's cleared still to fight.
Yeah, I know. He still got some injuries.
Yeah.
So, whatever.
Absolutely. John, any closing remarks before we wrap up tonight?
I'm going to get on this Victor Oladipo, and I'll be on Twitter reporting about that all night. Hopefully, like I said, hopefully everything's 100%, and he can get back out there. If not, you know, the person will deal with that too. I know a longtime listener of ours, friend of mine, Justin Powell, lost his dad. Want to send condolences out to his family, him and his family. He does listen, dude. If nobody listens, Justin Powell listens. Let me tell you, Brad and Reese. But like, he lost his dad. I just want to send him the condolences to him and his family. Outside of that, I thank everybody for listening. We've been getting good responses either through the Twitter feeds at Crossroads or through Three Foolish Men. And I get more and more people ask me every day what I think about their particular team going further, whether it be NFL or college or pro basketball. And I enjoy great interactions talking with people about sports.
Perfect. Absolutely. I want to thank our Facebook Live guests that we've had tonight. People have been popping in and out. I want to thank them for joining us. Obviously, thank our OGs, our loyal Crossroads Sports Radio listeners as well. This will be up on iTunes as well. Also, this whole thing will be played over again on the Facebook page, so you can play it out. Also, please like, subscribe, and share to all those things. And we'll see you guys again next week for another show, and we'll let that know what day that's going to be. Still trying to figure that out, but we'll let everybody know when it gets in. John, thanks again for joining, my friend, and we'll see you next week.
All right. Take care now. Thanks for listening.
Absolutely. Prayers Oladipo.
Crossroads Sports.